From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, October 14th, 2025. Maine Governor Janet Mills announced today that she's running for the U.S. Senate in a bid to unseat Republican Senator Susan Collins. Mills was a top recruit for National Democrats as they eye what many consider a long-shot bid to retake the Senate majority in next year's midterm election. But as Steve Missler reports, the governor will first have to navigate a potentially bruising Democratic primary.
Mills' national profile skyrocketed after a February confrontation with President Donald Trump at the White House, drawing widespread praise from Democratic activists frustrated by their party's listless response to the aggressive agenda of his second term. In an interview, Mills said her scuffle with Trump helped push her into the Senate race. She said it showed his monarch-like ambitions must be challenged.
The Congress is not standing up to him. Susan Collins is not standing up to him. And, I don't think I could forgive myself if I didn't give it everything I've got to change what's going on in a very dysfunctional government in Washington.
Mills has proven a formidable statewide candidate, winning two statewide races as governor and holding her own in Maine's conservative 2nd congressional district. But the contest against Collins poses a new challenge. Democrats haven't won a Senate seat in Maine since 1988. Collins has held her seat since 1996 and withstood Democrats' expensive efforts to defeat her just 5 years ago. Mills also enters a primary contest animated by divisions within the party, and at a time when polls suggest registered Democrats are increasingly disillusioned with its established leaders. The dynamic has produced a crop of insurgent candidates, including Graham Plattner, an oyster farmer and military veteran who has made a big splash in Maine since launching his campaign in August. He's also been critical of National Democrats' recruitment of Mills.
Running candidates that are picked by D.C., running campaigns that are driven by D.C., I think that's a losing strategy. I think what we're doing, which is trying to really build a campaign of Mainers, for Mainers, that is how we win the state of Maine.
Plattner, who has been endorsed by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, has vowed to stay in the primary contest, as has fellow Democrat Jordan Wood. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
As expected, Mills' entrance into the race against Susan Collins has shaken up the crowded Democratic primary. Kevin Miller has more.
Within hours of joining the race, Mills picked up an endorsement from Emily's List, which is the nation's largest abortion rights organization focused on electing Democratic women. The Mills campaign also quickly set up a joint fundraising committee with the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, offering further proof that the governor is the preferred nominee of Senate leaders in D.C. One primary contender, beer brewer Dan Kleban of Freeport, announced he was dropping out. He then endorsed Mills on Tuesday.
I got into this race for the same reason I started Maine Beer Company, to do what's right. While our message was right, the timing simply isn't. Governor Mills is the right leader for this moment and is in the best position to win.
But two other high-profile Democrats signaled they plan to stay in the race. Graham Plattner, an oysterman and Marine Corps veteran from Sullivan, said his campaign is not slowing down and accused National Democrats of, quote, meddling in a Maine primary. And Jordan Wood, a Bristol resident who formerly worked on national politics, alluded to Mills' age and decades in office when he wrote that it was, quote, time for the next generation to represent Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
A new report from the Maine Center of Economic Policy argues that recognizing the full sovereignty of the Wabanaki Nations would be an economic boon to the whole state. As Ari Snyder reports, the tribe's autonomy is currently limited by a 1980 Settlement Act.
Full sovereignty could eventually add $330 million annually to the state's GDP and create nearly 3,000 jobs, according to the report. Author James Myall says that's because tribes with full sovereignty can invest in more innovative development projects and receive more federal funding. And he says the benefits extend beyond tribal groups.
There are examples of different enterprises that tribes have engaged with around the country that help to create jobs not just for tribal members, but also people in neighboring communities.
Myall says Maine could start by implementing the recommendations of a 2020 task force on tribal relations. Those include recognizing tribal jurisdiction over hunting and fishing on tribal land, allowing tribes to operate casinos and making it easier for the Wabanaki Nations to acquire land. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Visitors at Acadia National Park were undeterred by the government shutdown this holiday weekend and came out in droves to enjoy the fall foliage. Susan Harmon traveled from Connecticut with her daughter.
Because my daughter works for the federal government, she kind of knew that there would be parts of it closed, but overall, it's been fine for us.
The parking lot at the Halls Cove Visitor Center was full Sunday morning with staffers from the Island Explorer bus service directing cars to the Acadia Gateway Center in Trenton. And visitors were still climbing the 52 steps up to the gift shop and restrooms, although the section of the visitor center normally staffed with park rangers was closed. Food banks are fielding increased requests for assistance with less food on hand. More than 2,000 people visited the Brunswick Food Bank, run by the Midcoast Hunger Prevention Program, back in September. Organizers say that's an increase of nearly 50% over the last year. Ron Condon of Brunswick says he and his neighbors are organizing a food drive on Saturday to help bolster supplies in the area.
If all we collect is 50 pounds of food, well, we're going to be able to feed 50 people, one meal. We'll be thrilled. That'd be 50 meals for people who wouldn't have gotten them if we hadn't tried.
Officials with the Midcoast Hunger Prevention Program say federal cuts to programs like the Emergency Food Assistance Program and local food purchase agreements have reduced contributions from some major suppliers. According to Feeding America, Maine has the highest rate of food insecurity in New England. This Thursday will mark the first ever Down East Fishing Family Forum in Ellsworth. Organizers say it'll offer the community a place to discuss the issues that matter most. Forum co-organizer Amanda Smith with the Sunrise County Economic Council lives in the Jonesport-Beals Island area.
In our little fishing communities, we're all facing some very similar challenges and heartaches and just things that will make your hair go gray.
But those communities, she says, can be pretty isolated. The goal of the forum is to bring fishing families together to talk, connect, and share resources. The half-day event at Woodlawn in Ellsworth will feature discussions on fishing safety and emergency response, stress management, injury and chronic pain, and income diversification. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, an in-depth discussion about question 2 on Maine's November ballot. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.